I love gold.
Somebody help him.
I am Trading Estate David D. And I'm here with Jersey CID Sarah D. Bunting.
Anyone lose a brick of pound notes?
Stakeout Snacker Tar Arietto.
Bananas.
And Portable Smelter Allison Lohoff.
They'll never catch us now.
Well, welcome to Extra Hot Great. I'm not sure if I should continue because I don't know if that intro is going to be redone.
Let's be honest.
Intro. Let's
take our victories where we can get them today. I'm a little high from some prescription drugs.
Mm-hmm.
Perfectly legal.
Perfectly legal prescription.
That's
drugs.
How they get you.
That's right.
Were they prescribed to me? Who's to say? With the show.
Well, all right, here we go. You may remember our guest as our foreign crime procedural correspondent at Previously.tv. You've also heard her with us here many times before. Please welcome back Allison Lohoff. Allison.
Yay.
Thank you. Thank you so much for being here on this day, because you didn't know it was going to be like this. Let's talk about the gold. On 26 November 1983, as they like to style it in the UK, the Brinksmat Security Depot at Heathrow Airport was robbed by six armed men who got a lot more than they expected, specifically 3 tons of gold bullion worth 26 million pounds. In this miniseries, we meet Kenny Noy, Jack Lowden from Slow Horses, who is asked to fence it, John Palmer, Tom Cullen from Downton Abbey, who smelts it with old jewelry to sneak it back into circulation a little bit at a time, Edwin Cooper, Dominic Cooper, presumably no relation, from Mamma Mia, a South London tough guy turned social climbing lawyer who also joins the laundering scheme, and Hugh Bonneville and Charlotte Spencer as Brian Boyce and Nikki Jennings, two of the cops on the task force, trying to run down the thieves.
I just figured out why all these guys got caught.
Yeah.
Because they had so much gold bullion, they couldn't make enough soup. Hide it.
Well, the series already ran in the UK earlier this year. In this country, the first two episodes dropped Sunday on Paramount Plus. Let's do the Chen check-in. Allison, should our listeners watch The Gold?
An unreserved yes.
Okay, Sarah.
Yes, I think so.
Dave, I'm going to go to you after this so that you can explain your connection to this show. But okay. Then I think you should be quiet for a while. But do you think, what is your answer for the Chen check-in?
Are you saying that I should explain why I made this show happen?
I'm going to get to that after. But for now, just yes or no, Chen check-in.
Yes.
Okay. Yes, for me as well. Dave, we have to start with you. Normally, we go to our guest first, but you went a little insane looking into this topic last week. That's unrelated to how you're doing today, yeah. But explain how you manifested this.
Well, I'll tell you, Tara.
Mm-hmm.
When the show came up and I was reading about it, I'm like, I am sure I've seen a television program about this before. Mm-hmm. 100% without fail. This is just a second TV stab at something that we've watched before. And then I started searching, and the only thing that came up in the searches that was like, yes, the film industry has made this thing, was a 90s, I think, take on it from the UK, starring Sean Bean, a TV movie.
Mm-hmm. Which we have not seen.
We have not seen. And I thought, well, that must have been it. We must have just forgotten. I must have forgotten. I was like, I haven't seen it. No, I've forgotten. I must have seen it. Then I watched it a little bit online. I was like, no, that's not it. And then so I looked and looked and looked until I figured it out, is that I explained the whole plot of what we just saw in The Gold in an extra hot great from way, way back.
Yeah.
in which I believe Sarah asked us to find a British crime to make a TV show out of.
Mm-hmm.
She did something about a lady trapped in a tree.
I don't recall that.
I don't either, but
anyway, she'd make it.
We'll link it in the show notes. That was Extra, Extra Hot, Great, episode 17, British Crime Stories.
Yes, and the Crime Eagle.
If I had to shorthand the whole thing, it's a lot like the British version of what you saw of the crime that Goodfellas is centered around.
Yes, yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's right.
And except, you know, everybody, you know, they don't have, the policemen don't have guns, they got silly hats, and everybody's eating chips.
Yeah. Okay, lean back, drink some of your coffee, and we're going to talk about the show a little bit more. So now we are going to our illustrious guest, Allison. Welcome. Most of the foreign crime stories that you formerly covered for us on previously.tv were fictional. What does a foreign true crime story have to do to draw you in?
Well, that was one concern I had when I was reading the description of this. I was like, oh, it's true and it happened. Like, I don't know. True crime, I love, but it usually has to be higher. Well, this is very high stakes because it was like 27 million pounds and 80s pounds. So it was a lot of money, but I don't know. There has to be a more sinister element to it to make me interested. But when I saw who was in it, then I was like, well, it has to be good. So I watched with interest, and I really loved it. I thought they handled it super well.
Mm-hmm. Sarah, this was basically a process-a-thon for you. By the time they brought in Archie from Customs and Excise to join the team of cops, it was like you had built this thing from scratch, I felt.
Yeah, pretty much. I did think that they did a good job. First of all, not just with the processy part, which like it is extremely processy from the jump, but fairly subtle about it in that way of like European true crime where they don't hold your hand quite as much or give you quite as much of like, here's a teaser reel of, you know, what you're going to expect from the rest of the series.
Yeah.
So I thought that by the time we got to like a literal whiteboard and this guy who was like very keen to share all of his nerd intel, by the time we got to that guy, they had earned it, I thought, because I mean, I hate this word, but it is immersive or it was immersive to me. But I think part of that is that the series understands that the people who are going to watch and be interested in a story like this and a slightly more, not just processy, but like business style of crime and why white collar crime is important to, like, once this money disappears, it's possibly being used to fund terrorist activities and the sort of long reach of laundered money.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
There's a certain audience that is not gonna care. Like they want less talky, more killy. Mm-hmm. And they're not trying to get those people. The writing is not trying to get those people. It's trying to tell this story, which is actually a legit wild story. If you leave aside like the extremely complicated, not even paper trail, but like gold trail of assays and stamps and all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that the series was very smart about what it was and did not try to be this like gory, grisly. It's like The Sopranos. Like a lot of The Sopranos was like the bureaucracy of organized crime.
Mm-hmm.
And people who were like, we want a higher body count, that David Chase was kind of like, all right, well, occasionally people are going to get killed, but I'm not talking to you.
Yeah.
Right. The series knows who is watching and is the best possible series for those people and doesn't try to be too, I don't know, like flamboyant about what was basically a red tape heist in a lot of ways.
Yeah. Allison, sounds like you agree.
I did. And I, you know, when they got to, I think it's episode 2, when they kind of run down how the laundering is happening, when their customs guy, or what is his position?
Yeah, he's from Customs and Excise, Archie.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So when he whiteboards it, I mean, I had to rewind it a few times to understand what was really happening. And I still don't. That's mm-hmm. how complicated it is. And I joke to my husband, Chris, like, it just goes to show, like, this type of villain, they're so smart to be able to figure out all these things. It's like, they're too smart to have a regular job. So they pull off something like this. And yeah, some they're willing to go to prison just to make it happen. But like, I thought that it was fast enough without getting bogged down in any of that, but still good at telling that type of complicated story.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think a society that is so in love with the word villain, and I did enjoy how it was used in this show.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yes, they're a proper villain.
I made a note specifically.
South London's greatest such and such villain.
Mm-hmm.
Is there any surprise the culture loves the word villain so much, created so many great pirates?
Did not surprise me at all.
Yeah. I also like that the first moments of this also established, like, not quite the first moments, but certainly the first episode, that the guys who are involved in the laundering, like, they're already doing really well. John and mm-hmm. Kenny both already have their, like, you know, reproduction tutor estates.
Right.
John's wife is, you know, rolling up on her horse and stuff. Like, there's that part of it too, where it's like, you don't need to do this. They're not like the stick-up guys. But that part of the appeal of this is, like, it's just like Allison, like you said, like, they're too smart to not do it. Like, it's so, the challenge of it is so enticing that they sort of overlook the danger and how this could affect their own lives. And, like, they have to get into it.
Right. And it's like there's class warriorism that.
Yes. I wanted to ask you about
that play that I really enjoy. And of course, the attorney, you know, lays that out like, he, you know, Richie Rich, he's like, yeah, but I'm from those streets. And, mm-hmm. you know, he really lays it out there, too. And I love Jack Lowden, and I loved him in Slow Horses, his mm-hmm. ambition as that, like, butter wouldn't melt guy.
Yep.
The MI5 agent in that show. Mm-hmm. And then here, when I saw that he was in it, I was like, oh, my gosh, can he play this? And he really does beautifully.
It's just like the Gilded Age. Oh, I got so much money. Why won't they let me in? Let me in, you rich, so-and-so old money people. Pound, pound, pound. Let me in!
They won't let him in.
Well, I was going to ask Allison about that because there were a couple of times I didn't take many notes on this, which usually is a sign of quality, that mm-hmm. I'm just like carried along with it and I'm mm-hmm. not writing down a bunch of stuff that bugged the shit out of me, which is like the, you know, my baseline, especially for true crime. That's like six episodes. Ugh.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like, it's British, so it sounds convincing. Also, I was raised by a coin collector, so some of this stuff is like Grandpa Bunsy, Buntnip.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
But there were a couple of monologues that it's like, one of my notes was like, do I need this, like, you know, BAFTA bait speechifying from this dude about his daddy issues? But I think that there are, for real, like, class issues, like, braided into a lot of true crime stories like this from UK that we as Americans are just sort of like, eh, like, okay, there's drivers, who cares? But I think the perspective on that is different. Allison, you watch probably more BritCon than we do. Do you think they did this well?
I do. I mean, it is truly braided into everything. And of course, there's that, you know, every crime is about class in the U.S. too, but they've just got hundreds of years on us and like in ways that we'll never understand. Mm-hmm. So I think that, of course it's a major factor here, and they do a lot of posing about it, but I thought that it was necessary to kind of show that as well. And I think that what Tara was saying about the houses, and especially Kenny's house, and like it's you know, the modern version of what they feel like a wealthy person would have. It, you know, it was just so perfectly 80s mm-hmm. tacky, you know, in a way that just showed like whatever he's trying to do, you know, he's never going to be whoever this person is he's trying to be. So,
yeah. And same with Edwin, too. I mean, even before we find out his backstory, it's clear like he's got something to prove. He's got a real chip mm-hmm. on his shoulder. And the stuff with when he's laundering the money by buying this condo as well. And they're like, oh, we can buy you a furniture package from Conran's. It's like, that's so 80s too.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah. And there's almost as much "it's a changing world" talk here as in Downton Abbey too, like especially in the scenes with him and the realtor, who both are like
trying to make toast,
definitely on the come up.
Yes.
I also love watching scenes of British interrogations because they're so much more confident and less aggro, I think, than what we see in American cop shows. Like the scene here where Robert basically says one thing. This is the guy that works at Brinks Matt, and then Brian like takes 2 minutes to completely unravel everything. He's like, "You don't need to say anything else. I got it." It's like, yes, gorgeous. Mm-hmm. So Allison, talk about that.
Yeah, I absolutely love that. And he was like, "I sit in rooms with you every single day. I know exactly what happened, and here it was." And the guy just crumbles, and it's perfect. Like, I love the flying squad cops as well. Hottie Scotty, Eamon Elliott,
yes,
who is just, with his mustache. Mm-hmm. Come on. And Charlotte Spencer, who is rocking it has to be an homage to Scully, this haircut that she had.
It's, yeah,
so wonderful, beautiful red hair. And like, there was class stuff in that too. Like, mm-hmm, she's from the States and, you know, they recognize her somehow. Like, London is like a small town, like South London. Everybody knows each other. They're like, "Oh, you're, mm-hmm, Millie so-and-so's daughter."
Yeah.
And she's like, yeah. And, you know, she like, there's a feminism angle there too. She's trying to like make her name. And the flying squad is like so historically corrupt, you know, and Hugh Bonneville has to like lower himself to work with them. I just thought there were so many strands running through the whole thing of these different dramatic elements. And still, it's so funny, you know, the writing is so good and very cracking throughout. So I really liked the interrogations as well.
Mm-hmm. Christmas cracking.
Crackering.
Yeah, I also look forward to watching on and finding out how much more of a part Freemasonry is going to be playing, because there was that element as well with the local possibly crooked Kent cop, like just feeding information to Kenny unknowingly. Yes, or knowingly. Love that.
Yeah, the running gag about Kent really made me laugh.
Yeah, it's like, well, that's where all the birds sing. And then, like, I had to, like, go into to do, like, dissertation-level research on this because, you know, the Masons and the way that they're tied into the police force. But, like, again, in lower classes, like, it's so interesting and strange, although it's probably happening here, too. What do we know? But, like, I thought that was so funny. Like, then their stonecutters meeting where they're, like, leaning over to get the info. I loved it.
Totally. I hesitate to give Dave the last word, but I'm going to, because he was also mad about the Cockney rhyming slang. We had a crash course in what doing my barnet means.
When I was growing up, this is earlier in my life.
Mm-hmm. Okay. God.
My dad had a book of Cockney rhymes, like, you know, like a toilet book, you know, mm-hmm, one that was kept there. And I didn't understand 100% what it was, because I thought they were supposed to be jokes. And then you open it up and it's like, what's the one they use in the show or that you gave?
Well, they use
like
a couple.
Human, it was boat, race, face. So when they say boat, they mean face. I was reading that as a kid. I was like, well, that's not funny. Fast forward. So my disdain for Cockney slang started when I was 4. Continues to this day here in my early 50s. And I'm just going to say it. Cockney slang is stupid. Well, I hate it.
This is not an invitation for any Cockneys to come to our house and beat Dave up. He is clearly in no position to defend himself, particularly not today, but in general.
I mean, I didn't know the first time, like recently, where I came across it, which, you know, was Ocean's 11, where Don mm-hmm. Cheadle's like, Barney, you know, Rubble. Now we're in real, you know, Barney Rubble now, or whatever he says. He says, now we're in real Barney now. And it's like, what? Barney Rubble, trouble. I'm like, how do you as a person make those connections without living? It's just like living a third. It's like learning a third language in your life.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, I got this again. You know, I had to go to school for French. And now, apparently, back in the English-speaking world, and people are saying Barney Rubble for trouble? Forget about it. No, thank you.
Right. And when they shorten it, boat race, to rhyme with face, but they shorten it to boat.
Yeah.
What are we doing here?
Well, how are you ever going to make that connection? We've lost that, you know, it's like the Rosetta Stone, but somebody chopped out the middle.
Yes.
Anyways, that's why I give this show 1 star.
Wow.
Jeez. No, you don't. You liked it.
No,
you're
I did like
it.
I did like it a lot. And I'll tell you why. One of the reasons why I liked it beyond all the great reasons everybody in the panel has said today. By the way, guys, congratulations for all those great reasons. My additional reason is they weren't tempted to turn this show, because of all the weird characters and a lot of stupid people involved, that this didn't turn into a Guy Ritchie show. And it didn't. Like, I think that's a temptation for something
like
this.
Yeah, I see what you're saying. Yeah.
That's a great point.
But it's not. It's like, it's a nice sort of straightforward, stylized look at things. So, yeah, I appreciate it. And I'm looking forward to watching more of Gold, comma the. Now I'm going to press the button for the next segment. Speaking about robberies, it's time for the great train robbery, because we're going around the dial on the very train that was robbed by Sean Connery and Donald Sutherland. I hope we meet them along the way. First up, wait, hey, if you guys could both, if everybody can incorporate either Sean Connery and or Donald Sutherland into their talk, I will give you something good.
I can.
Same.
Okay. Challenge pending. I watched the first half of The Other Black Girl. It's a new show on Hulu. Nella, who's played by Sinclair Rogers, is an editorial assistant at Wagner Publishing in New York, the only black person who works in her office, maybe the only black person to have worked there since Kendall Ray Phillips was an editor in 1988, and only 1988. But then Hazel Mae McCall, who's played by Ashley Murray, starts working as an editorial assistant in the next cubicle, and Nella is happy to have a coworker she can relate to, or can she, because Hazel's motives and purpose seem to be a bit of a moving target. She has no knowledge of some references that Nella assumes that as two black women they would have in common. This is based on the book by Zakiya Dahlia Harris, which I read. Brag. And it's interesting to watch because the book definitely has a lot of cinematic elements. And so it's interesting to see them play out. It's sort of like it's a mystery. It kind of progresses on two tracks because it's also telling the story of what happened in 1988. And this editor and her author, Diana Gordon, who is played in the current day by Garcelle Beauvais, by the way, looking absolutely stunning. The performances are all great. It has sci-fi elements as well. Hunter Parrish from Weeds is also around, being like the white boyfriend who is trying really hard but kind of an idiot. And they live in Bay Ridge, Sarah, so there's content for you as well. I just wonder if it would be, you know, the jury's still out, and from what I've read, they sort of leave the ending a bit more open than the book does, presumably so that they can do future seasons. As usual, I'm not sure that this wouldn't be better as a movie, but I reserve judgment. Like I said, I watched half of the season, so far so good. Even if you're only watching for the costuming on Hazel, it's kind of worth it because they pulled out all the stops with her look and her vibe.
Oh, I love that when they go all the way.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Well, it's a plot point that she dresses really cool, which is why it's weird when she's like, I love TLC. And then they play TLC and she's like, who's this? And Nella and her friend are like, hmm? So, you know, that will get explained in the back half of the season, what her deal is. I mean, sort of. But anyway, The Other Black Girl, it's on Hulu. The whole season dropped all at once last week, so check it out. And for my plug, Dan Harmon has a new show coming out. So he's going to be part of the animation block on Fox Sundays. The show is called Crapopolis, and I reviewed it for Cracked. You can find that link in the show notes.
You're the man now, dog. Sean Connery.
Yep.
Uh-huh.
Allison, what do you have for us?
Well, I've been enjoying a fun mystery out of the UK, which is streaming on the Acorn TV app. Now, I sometimes feel like I'm the only person who has this app, even though I've been continually trying to like make fetch happen for it since it launched.
But I have that it too.
Okay, good. But yeah, that can't actually be right because they've now started producing their own content. The most popular of which thus far has been this show, Harry Wild, starring the ageless Jane Seymour, who was a Bond girl, and Sean Connery played James Bond.
Oh.
There you go. Jane Seymour plays Harriet Wild. She's a recently retired professor of literature. She's English, but she lives in Dublin. She spends her leisure time day drinking and basically doing whatever the hell she wants because she's Jane Seymour. Her adult son is a detective in the Irish Garda, and they're kind of estranged, which is not helped when Harry starts happening upon dead bodies and with the help of a young ne'er-do-well townie with a heart of gold solving murders. The kid is played by Rowan Ned, who also stars in Whitstable Pearl, which is another great show wherein his mom also happens to solve murders when she runs across bodies. This is like an Acorn thing, and he's in both shows, and they're both on Acorn, and they're both really enjoyable. So I mentioned Harry Wild. The reason I wanted to talk about it today was because I heard Sarah say in a recent episode that she's been watching Murder, She Wrote, and this sort of will scratch that itch. She's like a modern day Fletcher who fucks.
There it is.
Excuse me. And so she is really good in it. It's super enjoyable, I think. And the mysteries are good. You know, nothing major, but it's, you know, lighthearted in that there's some comedic elements, but there's also some drama in it. And, you know, the interesting murders. And series one is currently on Acorn, and series two is about to come out later this month.
Doesn't Jessica Fletcher fuck?
I mean, it doesn't, not on camera, but you know, we can only assume.
Off camera 24/7, I bet.
I don't know, Sarah, if you've gotten deep into the rewatch and seen the Magnum PI crossover.
I'll tell you who's getting deep into it. Jessica Fletcher.
That's right. So anyway, Harry Wild, I don't have a plug, but I'll throw in that extra show, Whitstable Pearl on Acorn, is really nice too.
Ba-ba-ba-ba-da.
Great. Dave, how are you? Before Sarah goes, I just wanted to correct myself. Zakiya Delilah Harris, my notes app auto-corrected her name, so it's not Dahlia, it's Delilah. Go ahead, Sarah.
Sarah D. Bunting, you're next.
I shall. Having recently found myself obliged to subscribe to MGM Plus for work reasons, I was like, all right, well, since I'm here and I tried to save money with the annual plan, let's get the most out of it. What old school procedurals are on here for me to enjoy? And behold, Cagney and Lacey, which I had not seen in years, but I remember liking it pretty well when I was watching it at the time. It is fine. I had actually forgotten that Sharon Gless is actually Cagney number three. Loretta Swit played her in the TV movie pilot. And then for the short 6-episode first season, Chris Cagney was played by Donald Sutherland, who's actually Christopher Cagney. So that's my what? Donald Sutherland.
Wow.
Gosh.
Not true. It was Meg Foster. No. Anyhow.
Oh. Like, my God.
You're like, how did I miss that? Like, because it did not happen.
That was good.
I wonder how long I could have kept Dave going with that. Here we are, back at actual Sharon Gless, the canonical Chris Cagney, and her flawless peasant skirt and scrunch boot combinations. I've been complaining about the ruffly tyranny of the peasant look on social media for like 3 years now, and this made me kind of take back everything, especially when she pairs it with like a members only jacket and a bunch of gold chains, and it's like, okay. Fine. But I mean, it's not 1982 anymore. What do we do with this information? I also forgot a fetal Carl Lumbly was in this, and Martin Cove, who was like shirtless in the credits every episode. Mm-hmm. And it's a total, hey, it's that guy fest. I recently consumed a mid-season episode starring Talia Balsam and her beautiful Wella Balsam looking hair as a trainee detective, and Crazy Grace Zabriskie is a witness or an ear witness. This is back when TV shows really cared about faking New York City also. So this did shoot in Los Angeles, but it doesn't really look like Grotsky Manhattan, but at least they put some effort into making it look realistically Grotsky. That said, I liked this show better like 30 years later when it was Scott and Bailey. So if you're going to rewatch one of these, I would make it Scott and Bailey, although that's not any easier to find for free on a streaming service these days, as far as I could discern on justwatch.com. But if you do decide to spring for MGM Plus, that's where Cagney and Lacey is. It's not bad. You really, this is like exhibit A though, of those shows where like it's 48 or 49 minutes and you absolutely see where the extra 6 or 7 minutes is. Like there's some episode where they're like chasing someone through the bowels of a ship. And it's like, yes, Dave, I said bowels. And it's like up every ladder, down every ladder, these really awkward camera setups so that, why? Like to prove that they did this whole foot chase and it wasn't their stunt doubles? Like who can just cut all this out? Get to the part where they catch the dude. But yeah, it's fine. It's good to have on and like just do a craft and don't pay that close attention and occasionally look up at the fashions.
I have a question. What's Grotsky mean?
Gross.
And is he related to Wayne Grotsky?
No.
Yes, how in the hell Wayne's American are you going cousin. To run Game Time, Dave? This is a serious we'll question.
Carefully, carefully, careful, L-Y. Speaking of MGM Plus, here is my plug. They are trying it in the true crime space these days as well, including a four-parter that came out in the spring on the Amityville case, both the real murders and the cultural/horror phenomenon. It is called Amityville, an origin story. I would not recommend subbing to MGM Plus just for this either, but it is pretty ambitious in its way and very watchable. And I reviewed it the other day on my True Crime Review newsletter. Check it out, bestevidence.fyi. We'll have a link in the show notes.
They called it the Grot one.
They did.
Dave misses 100% of the jokes he doesn't make. I
had to skate to where the joke was going to be.
Coming up in the Extra Hot Great universe, Extra Extra Hot Great 262 dropping this Friday. Two of us are going to be talking about the Apple TV Plus docuseries, The Supermodels, and a third may or may not be there. And then on the main show next week, Extra Hot Great 478, we're going to be talking about season 5 of Love is Blind with returning guest Brittany Luce, who we're getting for the first time since she took over as the host of NPR's It's Been a Minute. So that will be thrilling. Check it out. Extra Hot, Extra Extra Hot Great is at extrahotgreat.com/club to get those 262 plus episodes we've done.
Should I do it again?
Nope.
All right, it's time for the canon. Y'all ready?
Yeah.
Y'all ready for the canon? Right, here we go. It's time for the canon. Presenting this week is Laura. Take it away, Laura.
My Name is Earl is one of my favorite shows of the early aughts, and I'm surprised that there are none in the canon. So what makes Earl a canon-worthy show? For me, it's because the show has great writing. It uses an arsenal of hilarious guest stars, the best ones recurring, and it's a sitcom with a tremendous amount of heart. And finally, it has the greatest soundtrack in TV history. So I selected season 2, episode 5, Van Hickey, as an exemplar of all four of these characteristics, and I hope you will agree that it is canon worthy. This episode finds Earl working to cross a past wrongdoing off his list, which is the exact premise of the show. And although not every episode involves list work, I thought that list work is what should be represented on the canon. And in this episode, Earl is addressing number 50, kicked an old guy out of my band. After unwittingly casting a senior citizen as the band's lead singer during a drive-through jam session, Earl and the rest of his bandmates, who are really in the band for chicks, find out the unintended impact of having Tom, the senior citizen, as their lead singer. Heard here in clip one.
Hello, ladies. MTV, video games, the internet.
I think your dad's having a stroke.
I'm not his dad, I'm the lead singer. The top cat.
You? If I wanted to get hit on by an old guy, I'd move back home.
Let's go.
To avoid alienating the female fans, they kick Tom Sparks out of the band and rob him of what would have been his one great memory, fronting a band and hooking up with chicks. Therefore, to cross this item off the list, Earl and Randy have to reunite the band. And here enters the best recurring character in the Earl world, Ralph, who is played by Giovanni Ribisi. He plays this role full creep and is having the time of his life doing this. Check out the creep factor here in clip two.
Hey, you know, I bet if we play with real instruments, we could have sex with real girls. Yeah, rock and roll, buddy!
Keep in mind that he's playing the majority of his scenes in this show in bikini underwear and cowboy boots, including this scene in clip three.
Which one of you wants to come check out the glow stars on my bedroom ceiling?
I do.
Well, I'm talking to you, Randy. I'm looking for somebody a little bit more photogenic.
I'll go.
Yeah. Hey, two of you can take the laundry room.
Are there stars in there?
Only you, rock star.
When it looks like Ralph is going to kick Tom out of the band again, the singer starts reading aloud the other list items and accidentally reads aloud number 51, slept with Ralph's mom. Ralph takes the news well. Heard here in clip four.
Oh, what are you doing, Ralph? Let's talk about this.
My mom, Earl, I lived with her for 9 months when I was just an itty-bitty baby. That was my first home. You broke into my home, man.
I didn't break in. The door was wide open. Not wide open, just wide enough to get in.
Well, tell it to Jesus. You disgraced his favorite angel.
She is an angel, a princess, the most perfect woman in the whole world. I wish I could have married her.
You did?
So, Earl marries Ralph's mom, but all is not well here in clip five.
What the hell's wrong with you?
Ralph, look, making an honest woman out of your mom was easy, but the consummating part may be a hurdle I can't jump.
So, what are you saying? My mom's not foxy?
Oh, your mom's foxy. But you have to admit, she's also...
an angel? A female angel? With female needs.
Okay, here's where the heart comes in. The writers could just lean into the trope of the Mrs. Roper type overly sexed older woman trying to get with a younger guy and go for all the cheap sitcom humor that we've seen there across the years. But even though they kind of start there, they don't stay there. We hear Earl likes being married to her. He just doesn't want to have sex with her. And there's a lot of space for the audience to empathize with her. She's just lonely, just like Tom wants that one great memory. It just never feels like the writers at Earl are punching down. And in fact, the writers take these two list items and let them resolve each other when Ralph's mom hooks up with the lead singer Tom after their gig. This is Earl at its best. The final aspect of Earl that I really love is its use of classic rock in episodes. I feel like they have always taken great care to find the best song to go in a particular scene. So this show, which has the music budget for Willie Nelson, Styx, The Guest Who, and Supertramp, all in this episode, choose for the only song that we ever hear Earl's band play, Frankenstein, which is an entirely instrumental song that has no vocals, but still got the lead singer laid. For its great use of music, for its heartfelt, funny, smart writing, and mostly for Giovanni Ribisi and his wardrobe, I think season two, Episode 5 of My Name is Earl should be in the extra hot great canon.
Thank you, Laura. Allison, you chose this selection. Please start us off.
Okay. Well, this episode has a lot going for it in the plus column. First of all, Greg Garcia is amazing at writing the lovable dirtbag. And I don't know if you guys have talked about Sprung on the pod yet.
Mm-mm.
I'm Oh, I'm going to save that for next time that I'm on, because I absolutely love that. I think he perfected the formula in that. Everything, just like Laura said, it's so heartfelt and funny. And I love this show and have a total soft spot for it. So, I mean, it's a disease shared by Gen X women of my particular age cohort that, against our better judgment, we find Jason Lee irresistible. And the same can be said for Giovanni Ribisi, Z-News follower. So I agree with a lot that she said about about Earl and why it should be in the canon. And this episode got some good laughs out of me, especially everything around the band, having been in some myself and played at a few real world, like Crab Shack equivalents. and then there were some very funny lines, like Catalina, in her one appearance in the episode, says, men don't like it when other men sleep with their mothers. It's why my brother killed my father, which I thought was very, very fun. You know, there's yet a third hand, though, that I don't necessarily agree about the trope, the Mrs. Roper angle, but I'll let someone else contribute some positives before I get into that.
Okay. Sarah.
Oh, it's to me you turn for sitcom positives. Just kidding. This presentation was excellent, first of all. And yes. Second of all, I saw this show name in the canon slot and was like, are you crazy for this one, Laura? But this, I think I had never seen a full episode before. I feel like Greg Garcia mostly is not my jam, but I did watch Raising Hope. That's him, right?
Yeah.
And I like that. Mm-hmm. So I think it just depends on the Garcia, where in the Garcia verse we are. I like a lot of these performers. Ribisi is brilliant in this episode, mm-hmm. no question. And that he's doing that, like, he's in his panties and his cowboy boots, but he's also doing that, like, carb belly, like, rooster posing that is so funny to me and so not vain. Like, this is really a good performance. And there are moments where I did laugh. Like, I thought the montage of excuses for not sleeping with the mom was well done. This is a show that is, like, professional and expert and understands the rhythms of comedy, but it wasn't like quite tight enough for me. And there were some jokes that had like a little air in them, and the whole vibe just felt a little bit dated to me. Like, I don't think this show has necessarily traveled well. Hopefully Tara can speak a little more to that, because she just watches more sitcoms and knows their language better than I do. But despite really liking these performances and being pleasantly surprised by this episode, it didn't quite, I was like pleasantly surprised, but not like thrilled or overwhelmingly overjoyed surprised, just like pleasantly surprised. And the bar was set fairly low. And, like, you know, Al's point is taken about Jason Lee. I don't know what it is about that guy. And but yeah, like, so I was like, why? That, like, ugh, why? But I would. but yeah, I've liked all these performers in other things since. It's not about that. There's just something that doesn't quite, it just feels very aughtsy and not in a way that's great to me. So I'm not sure how I'm going to vote, and I'm interested to hear Tara's take on it. T-Bone, what do you got?
Okay, well, I agree with Allison. I also think that the excuse montage was a high point of the episode. The moment where they're forming the band in the car by doing the dun-dun-dun to the instrumental Frankenstein. Those two were the funniest moments to me. But I don't necessarily agree with Laura that the show doesn't feel like it's punching down. I mean, it might be different when you're watching this in binge form. If you're marathoning it, that you have a different feeling about the characters and how the show feels about them. But I don't agree that it isn't, that it's taking Ralph's mother's female needs and desires seriously. I mean, I think the reason that it's a joke is that they're a joke. You know what I mean? Like, that's right. That's what gives the plot its drive that isn't it hilarious that now Earl is expected to sleep with this lady again because he married her? Like, I mean, it's, you know, it's an absurd premise for a show, and it's, this is an especially absurd premise for the episode. And, you know, with all due respect to Laura's point is taken, the extremely large music budget that they had, because every time there was a needle drop, I was like, holy shit. And the fact that they're still on Hulu, it's like, well, they didn't have to, you know, put in sub music either. Like, they had all the rights tied up in a bow. Good for them. Kind of a mixed bag. And I'll also say this was a rough week to be watching an episode of a sitcom where all three of your male leads are in Scientology and continue to be. Because I couldn't be unaware of that either. Dave.
I'm glad you brought up the point that they perhaps were not just punching down. I kind of felt really sorry for that actress, the mother actress. You've been on, I think she's been on the show. I don't think this is the first time she's been on the show, the character. And given the script, and basically the joke is, you ugly. And so, you know, not funny, really, for those characters to have jokes towards that. And otherwise, I thought, like, the episode had a couple good moments, but it didn't really make me laugh. So between those two things, I was like, nope, don't think I'm going to put this one in the canon. So there's my short and sweet, as I think we're all thankful for.
I was going to add that, like, what really makes this show very funny? And also, one more thing about the Mrs. Roper trope, like, Earl had already had sex with this lady. So that's what, which he willingly did the first time. So then, like, he has to drink a whole bottle of whiskey. That's what really bothered
me.
Although Whiskey River, that version, this down tempo version that's in there is so good. So I did enjoy that. Maybe they just did it just so they could use that song. But there is another moment in there where, because, oh my gosh, Giovanni Ribisi, Ralph, his revenge is then he's going to go sleep with Earl's mom. And there's like a casual sexual assault that happens, you know, when he grabs her. So she has to run out of the house, like buttoning her blouse. And I'm like, wow, this was 17 years ago. Like that, it felt, the jokes had gone bad. Unfortunately, because I do love the show, but what I love about it, and some of the characters that weren't in it at all, like Jamie Presley plays Joy, and she's an absolute genius in this show. And if she was in it for like 2 seconds. Mm-hmm. So I remember when I watched it, when it originally was on, she was the one that got big laughs out of me for sure. So that was unfortunate.
Also, there's something about this show where there's a joke where Jamie Presley's character is in a retirement home and she's helping them do their exercises. And one of the things they're doing is Red Rover. And there is a person that has to go from one side of the room to the other in a walker. And, you know, the joke is that thing where it's supposed to take so long, where it's kind of funny, not funny. Oh my God, get over with it again. And then at the end, it's supposed to be funny again because it's so absurd, it's gone on so long. Mm-hmm. That joke so didn't hit for me on this episode. And I'm not quite sure why it doesn't work here, where if they did it on something like Conan or something like that, it does. Mm-hmm. I think because like the energy of this show is generally low key, whereas there is a manicness to other episodes of other shows that could get away with that kind of thing too. So I thought that joke was a joke for another show and not for this show. So, all right. So everybody had their say. Shall we put this to the vote?
Yes.
All right. Allison Lohuff, what say you? Canon worthy or not?
I'm afraid I'm going to have to say no.
Sarah D. Bunting.
Yeah, I know she made us Rice Krispie squares and it was a good presentation, but this is going to have to be a no for me too. Not quite there.
And Tara?
For me as well, but thank you so much for the excellent presentation, Laura.
Yes, thank you, Laura, very much. But, unfortunately, this means that My Name is Earl, Season 2, Episode 5, Van Hickey. You're hereby not inducted to the Extra Hot Great Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
Hey, it's time for the winner and the loser of the week. Dave has the winner. Dave. Thanks, Dave. The winner of the week is Disney, who received a $10 billion offer to acquire ABC. Because Disney's like, eh. And other people are like, mm. And one of the people going, with $10 billion is, get this, Byron Allen.
Yeah.
Byron Allen apparently has $10 billion in credit to offer Disney to buy ABC out from under them.
Billion with a B.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Billion, as in Byron.
Mm.
As a
Do you remember when, I guess it was the 80s, maybe the 90s, when Byron Allen was like, he had the comics show?
Oh, Comics Unleashed is still on.
No, didn't he have a show before that just called Comics?
Oh, probably.
Maybe I'm misremembering that. But anyways, yeah, where he was that. And then he had his own talk show for a while. And now he owns the Weather Channel.
Yeah.
And like a whole bunch of just like affiliate stations from here to there. And it's just, I mean, good for him.
Yeah, he's rich.
But Byron Allen, you're thinking, boy, all your shows suck. And then he's like, yeah, well, I got $10 billion. Fuck you, David T. Cole. And I'm like, well, I guess you're winner of the week, aren't you, Brian Allen? And he's like, yeah. And our loser of the week?
Our loser of the week.
Tara, you're Tara.
I'm Sarah, Tara.
Take it easy. Tara, who's our loser of the
Sarah,
week?
Sarah, take a break. Jeremy Strong has listed his South Williamsburg condo for sale, which that doesn't make him a loser.
Wait, remind me again who Jeremy Strong is.
Jeremy Strong played Kendall Roy in Succession. And he originally, when this listing went up, everyone was very curious about whose place it was because several acting awards were prominently displayed in the photos. And internet sleuths figured out it was probably him, and that seems to have been confirmed because now it's on a bunch of real estate agent sites with, like, his name and the property. So, real douche move, putting all of your acting trophies in. And if he didn't do it, and I'm sure he did not personally stage them, he, you know, also didn't remove them when they were taking the photos. So, just saying. Come on.
I sent this to my realtor husband. And was like, comments, questions? And he's like, well, first of all, that virtual staging is really fugazi. Like, they didn't match up the light sources. So, like, this is what Dan noticed first. And I was like, you didn't notice the giant Emmys in the foreground? He's like, oh, I noticed. Then he was like, yeah, I was going to ask how you got this because this can't be a public listing. I was like, no.
Guess what?
How else would I have gotten it? Your password? I don't know that shit. And he was like, who decided this? And then he was like, is this a, he was like, oh no, I hope this isn't in my house. And it wasn't. But like, generally the feedback was like, Jeremy Strong probably didn't know this happened and should probably fire this specific agent for a number of reasons.
Yeah.
But the, you know, giant Emmys with the shadows pointing the wrong way are on the list.
Mm.
Speaking of things with shadows pointing the wrong way.
Speaking about strong performances.
Hey!
There you go.
Speaking about
like
fake
Sean Connery.
Sean, strong performances. Do you know what time it is?
I'm scared that it's game time, but apparently that's where we are.
Sure is. Game time team. Right here. All right, everybody, listen up. It's the eighth game time of the season. Our scores are Tara with 4. A win today can mean she wins the season and therefore wins both Donald Sutherland and the bones of Sean Connery.
Oh, no, thank you.
Sarah follows behind with 2. Value guests have just a single win so far. Today, we are playing Also Connect from Mark Grinolds, who earns himself an extra credit topic of his choosing, plus a free shirt from the Extra Hot Great Store at throughmethods.com, which he has already picked. If you see a guy walking down the street with a Mad, Bad, and Dangerous to Know t-shirt, stop him, grab him by the shoulders, and yell, "Are you Mark?" Based on the, he writes, Mark writes, based on the Great British quip. Based on the Great British Quiz Show Only Connect, that's a great British show called Only Connect. I know a lot of things over here are called the Great British whatever, but this is just called Only Connect. This game he has created so it focuses on connections and lateral thinking. You will be given a series of four clues. You must answer what these four things have in common. If you guess after the first clue, you might want to write this down, Tara. You get 5 points. He wants 5 points for that first one, then 3 points for the second one, then two, then one. So he's giving you a little extra bonus for guessing it out of the blue after the first clue. Now, shows may appear in clues more than once, but will not appear in answers more than once. Okay. So feel free to ask me if X has been an answer before if you get confused. I will be happy to give you that information. Note, all clues will involve actors or shows appearing on television. Not all the connections will be strictly TV related.
Okay.
TV is either in the answer or the clues, but not necessarily in the answers. Let's get a steel meal situation, please. Tara.
I was not expecting steel meals to be part of this, but you got it, Dave.
Thanks, Tara.
Sarah has one. I have three. Value guests have Eric's meal, so one.
Okay. You can steal at the very end, so steals will only be worth 1 point. But if you got them, use them, is what I say, especially for Allison with that Eric's steel meal. Just rolls over every week, so you're not screwing anybody out of one.
Sure.
They don't bang. Okay.
Aren't there also... whatever those things are, Molly,
Mindy Weathercall.
First of all,
yes,
thank you.
You and I each have one.
Get the name right. They're called Mindy Weathercall.
No. Mm.
And I'm here to tell you once again, they're not applicable to this game.
Oh.
They will be soon.
Okay.
But not today.
Got it.
21 questions, no equalizer challenge zones today. I will give you a guess after every clue, but please make it relatively quick. Are we ready to play? Also connect.
Let's find out.
All right, let's throw it to Picky, see what their order is. Why don't you? I think the order is, according to Picky,
we will start with Sarah,
then Tara, then value guess. All right, so up to four clues, Sarah D. Bunting. Quick guess after each one. You're describing what the common factor is between these things. Here
we go.
These are all things in quotes. Please choose an Egyptian hieroglyph.
Next hint, please.
Come on down.
Price is Right things.
Would you like to use a lifeline?
Phrases from game shows.
I'll accept that. Things said on game shows. That is a 2-point answer.
Thank you.
Tara.
Yep.
Justin Thoreau.
Famous sweatpant wearers.
John Slattery.
Sex and the City love interests.
David Duchovny.
I feel like I'm further away. Next.
Mikhail Baryshnikov.
Carrie love interest from Sex and the City.
You are correct, yes.
For 1 point?
1 point there.
Okay.
To Allison for her first question.
Okay.
Edgar Styles dies.
Next.
Jack says goodbye to Audrey and walks to a cliff over the ocean.
I'm not recognizing these names. Wuthering Heights.
Assassination attempt on David Palmer.
I don't know.
And lastly, Terry Bauer's body is found.
All of these things sound vaguely familiar, but Benson.
They all are vaguely familiar to you, but I cannot accept that answer. The answer is Times the Clock Was Silent on 24.
Oh.
My God.
All right.
Sure. There's your Sutherland
back
content.
Back to Sarah.
Sutherland Jr.
Back to Sarah. Niners.
Groups of rich snob kids on TV.
Greyhounds.
Fake sports teams on TV.
You are correct. Niners from Deep Space Nine, Greyhounds from Ted Lasso, Isotopes, and Pituitary Giants from Futurama.
Three points for that?
That is a three-point answer. To Tara.
Yes.
Salem.
Soap opera settings.
You are correct.
Wow, nice.
For five or four?
That is a five-point answer. Back to Allison. Brenda Vaccaro.
Feminine hygiene commercials from the 80s.
Christina Pickles.
Fuck off.
Meant to pick up pickles.
Hill Street Blues.
Terry Garr.
80s actresses in horror movies.
And lastly, Marlo Thomas. Brenda Vaccaro, Christina Pickles, Terry Garr, Marlo Thomas have what in common?
Oh, I don't know. They were all married to Phil Donahue.
Incorrect.
I regret to say I knew that from the first one.
Which is?
They are moms on Friends.
They are the moms of titular Friends. Correct. Sarah D. Bunting.
Yeah.
Lottie Bedloe, Florentines.
Say again?
Lottie Bedloe, Florentines.
Next hint.
Peter Sawkins, Strawberry and Elderflower Babas.
Things that got people eliminated first on the Great British Bake Off.
I love that guess.
Henry Bird, Chocolate Cardamom Mabullar.
Snacks people had to make on Taskmaster.
Lastly, Kim Joy, Stem Ginger Cake with Poached Pears.
So it is Bake Off. Christmas special dishes that won on Great British Bake Off Christmas special.
You were close.
Christmas.
Recipients of the Hollywood Handshake.
On
the Great British Bake Off, and I presume those were the dishes that got them that handshake.
I assume so.
Tara.
Yes.
Stanridge Glenn Gilchrist.
Next.
Mackenzie Allen.
Fictional law firms. Oh, I just fucking...
Conrad Dalton.
Fictional presidents. U.S. presidents.
Yes, you are correct. That was 16 Penn, Commander-in-Chief, Madam Secretary, and Matthew Santos was your last one from the West Wing.
Of course.
Back to Allison.
Okay.
Episode takes place entirely in Karen's bathroom.
Next.
Two candidates discuss, among other things, the merits of nuclear power.
Karen's bathroom, nuclear power. I don't have it. Next.
John Hamm appears in blackface.
This seems like something I definitely should know.
Yeah, one more clue.
Okay, one more.
A PBS crew takes over the trauma department.
My brain is not sliding in these lateral directions. I don't know.
All right, anybody know this one?
Live episodes?
Yeah, live episodes.
So things that happen on live episodes of scripted series is the answer, yes. All right, everybody's last question before our score break. To Sarah D. Bunting. Milo O'Shea.
Next.
William Fichtner.
Fichtner?
Fichtner.
Okay, Milo O'Shea. William Fichtner. Love interest on Mom?
Great guess.
Edward James Almost.
Lieutenants? TV lieutenants.
And finally, Glenn Close.
I don't know. Sorry, Story 50? What's the connection?
Anybody not?
Mm-mm.
Those are all Supreme Court justices on the West Wing.
Oh, wow. Oh,
damn it.
What? God.
All right, remember. Married
Ficky.
Yes.
Mary Hartman, Mary Hartman.
Soap parodies.
Family Ties.
NBC sitcoms.
Third Rock from the Sun.
NBC sitcoms that aired on Thursdays. That one never aired on Thursdays.
Last clue. WKRP in Cincinnati. Mary Hartman, Mary Hartman.
Oh.
Family Ties, Third Rock from the Sun, WKRP.
Show set in Ohio.
Show set in Hawaii. Ohio? That's right. Hawaii and Ohio together at last. Mm-hmm. The best of both.
Nicely
states
done.
Combining to make Hawaii worse.
Yeah.
All right. And our last question before the score break is for Allison.
Okay.
A mountain cabin explodes with two women inside.
Things that happen before commercials.
A woman with a large brimmed hat obscuring her face enters a courtroom.
Surprise. I don't know. Next.
A billowing curtain catches fire from some candles, sending a fancy hotel up in flames.
Murder, She Wrote plot lines.
And your last, multiple people are shot at a Moldavian wedding.
Oh, I feel like I should know, but I don't.
Anybody know this one? Just steal meals at play if you want those points. No, these are season-ending cliffhangers on the original Dynasty.
Oh.
I was going to say Simon and Simon.
Yeah, close.
It's like Revenge?
Simon and Simon Dynasty. Basically, the same show. All right, what's our scores?
Okay, I have 9. Sarah has 5. Allison looking to get on the board.
All right.
Ooh,
everybody's got
how you guess.
3 questions left. Back to Sarah Deep Hunting. Your first clue is Skin.
TV show set in the world of pornography.
The Secret Life of the American Teenager.
Next.
Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Shows with theme songs by Nerf Herder.
And finally, Beverly Hills 90210. So Skin, the American life of the American life of the secret teenager.
Teenager.
The secret life of the American teenager. Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Beverly Hills 90210.
What's the common trait? They all filmed at that high school in Torrance.
Correct.
Sarah.
Oh. Incredible. Ooh.
Torrance High School.
Nicely done.
Torrance.
Yes.
Number 6.
Battlestar Galactica Cylons.
Reva Shane Lewis.
Next.
Sarah Manning.
Oh, no. Next.
Boba Fett.
Disney Plus characters?
Incorrect. Characters who are or have been cloned.
Of course, Sarah Manning. Duh.
I thought that was the Sarah from Everwood, and I was like, nannies? Use my steel meal.
Battlestar Galactica number 6.
Right.
Guiding Light was the second one, Orphan Black, and then Boba Fett from et al. All right. Allison, Heyday. Heyday.
Episode names from Hill Street Blues.
I thought you were going to go say hee-haw, but... Small Curd Cottage Cheese Festival. Small Curd Cottage Cheese Festival.
Festivals and events from Gilmore Girls?
That's a good guess.
Mm-hmm.
The Crowning of the Princess Pig.
Oh, wait. right. Give me one more.
The Festival of the Dancing Surgeons. Sorry, that's not right. I misread that. The Festival of the Dancing Sturgeons. Different.
Shoot.
Slightly.
Slightly different than surgeons.
Princess Pig. Oh, festivals from Northern Exposure.
Another good guess.
Sarah Bunting, mm-hmm. Do you know this one?
Is this dumb St. Olaf shit that Rose talks about? It.
Oh,
yeah. Events in St. Olaf from the.
I would have get my first thought was like, Twee Gilmore Girls events as well.
Yeah. I should have known from Sturgeons. Dang.
All right, Sarah Debunting, here are your next set of clues. Made in America.
Series finale titles.
Long term parking.
Sopranos episode titles.
Yes, good for 3 points. College and Pine Barrens rounding out the clue set. Tara.
Yes.
Julia Duffy.
Replacement series regulars.
Cela Ward.
House love interest.
Laurie Metcalf.
Frasier love interest.
Juliana Margulies.
Lawyers.
Incorrect? Anybody want to steal that? Or
brunettes!
Just
I don't
answer
know.
Answer for shits and giggles?
No.
All right, let me give you the shows involved. See if you
okay.
can. All right, Julia Duffy, Baby Talk. Celia Ward, Sisters. Laurie Metcalf, Roseanne.
George Clooney, Boners.
George Clooney Boners is the exact verbatim answer.
I should hope so.
All right. Back to Allison.
Okay.
Sean takes one to a woman when he visits her in the hospital.
Chickens.
One is thrown during the opening musical number, Santa Barbara Skies.
Footballs.
One sits behind the alarm clock on Gus's nightstand.
Something from Psych that I don't know, but try again.
Last clue. There are slices on the ham in Lassiter's welcome basket.
Cheeses.
What was that?
In
cheeses.
Cheeses?
Nope. We're looking for pineapple appearances on Psych. You had the right show.
God.
How did I know that from the first one, too?
The Caroline I'll tell you. Question.
Mademoiselle Caroline. Yeah.
All right, last question for everybody. Let's quickly get the scores, please.
Okay, well, Sarah and I are tied with 9 points each. Allison's still looking to get on the board and finish strong.
I'm ashamed.
All right, looking to shoot the moon. Back to Sarah. One's LVAD, left ventricle assist device. So one's LAVD wire caused a lot of drama. The other often spoke of himself in the third person in court.
That's all one clue?
That's all one clue.
Okay.
So it's a clue about two different things.
Okay.
One's
LVAD.
LVAD.
It's a medical thing.
Yeah. One's LVAD wire caused a lot of drama. The other often spoke of himself in the third person in court.
George's?
Where Chidi saw the time knife.
The medium place? I don't remember the name of it, actually.
Real name of mall-dwelling singer Robin, particularly when she's blushing.
Red Robin? I don't know this.
Belonging to the late Project Runway designer Pepper.
Oh, okay. Yeah, all right. So that would be Wendy's. So fast food, clues, fast food joints, drive-thrus.
I'm going to give you that. The actual answer is restaurants, but I think they're all classified as fast food places. I think in my mind, our first clue was about two different Denny's.
Okay, right. Mm.
One from Grey's Anatomy. Of course. The other from Boston Legal.
Yes.
Chidi saw the time knife at the International Hole of Pancakes, or IHOP.
Right. Sure. Okay.
Red Robin was the answer to the third one, and then Wendy's was a restaurant. But they all are fast food, so we'll give that to you. Okay. All right. Tara.
Yep.
80s soap produced by Aaron Spelling, set at the St. Gregory in San Francisco.
Winery things. Okay.
Upcoming Disney Plus series spinoff of Hawkeye.
Echo.
That's to remind you, I'm buzzing you on the things that are in common. Not
yes, I know. I understand. Okay. I understand.
Ohio town setting of Glee.
TV title, four letter words.
Scott Foley and Lauren Cohen play spies in this short-lived series.
That's not shows on ABC. I don't know.
80 soap produced by Aaron Spelling, set at the St. Gregory in San Francisco, is Hotel. Echo is the one with
no.
Hawkeye. Lima is the Ohio town. And Whiskey Cavalier, these are all titles with NATO alphabet words in them.
Inescapable this week.
Yeah, wow. For real.
Our last clue is for Allison.
Gosh. Please help me.
Law and Order Special Victims Unit.
Oh, come on, man.
Long-running TV dramas with more than 20 seasons?
iCarly.
Shows that... Who's on iCarly? Jeanette McCurdy has been on.
Regular show.
No idea.
And lastly, to complete Law and Order, Special Victims Unit, iCarly, regular show, Benson.
How dare you? Sarah D. Bunting's favorite shows?
Incorrect.
Two of those were right, though.
Is this Benson?
Kind of.
Oh, there's shows with Benson's. Shows with on Benson's. Them?
All these shows have a character named Benson in them, is the correct answer. All right, that is regulation. Let's hear them regulation scores.
Allison put up a valiant fight, but she did finish with 0 points. Oh, I had 9. Sarah D. Bunting is our victress with 10.
Wow, squeaked it up. Congratulations.
Sarah.
I have to apologize to all the valued guests, past and present, most specifically myself.
Those little SOPs.
Yeah. Well, guys, that is it for another episode of Extra High Grade. We rolled out.
Oh, dear.
That's what happened, all right. We rolled out the Brinks mat to discuss our valuable conversation on the British crime miniseries, The Gold, before going around the dial, what stops at the other black girl, Harry Wilde, and Cagney and Lacey. While,
remember!
No, there's more. Well, Earl scratched another item off his list. Laura couldn't quite get Ben Hickey on ours. Everything moving slower than faster for Dave. We crowned winners and losers of the week. And Sarah was the winner of this week's Game Time from Mark. Next up, it's the supermodel on Extra Extra Hot Grade. And more Love is Blind on EHG Prime here next week. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David Deagle, and on behalf of Tara Arrieta,
London's changing.
And Sarah D. Bunting.
Got a bit Tinker Taylor this.
And Allison Lohoff.
Where's my smelter?
Thanks for listening. And we'll see you next time right here on Enter Hungry. End clip.
Your Highness, you're also like a stream of bat spits.
What?
It was one of Wilde's, one of Wilde's.
It sodding was not! For sure!
I merely meant, Your Majesty, that you shine out like a shaft of gold when all around is dark.
Oh. All right, you can stop us. We're not recording. I think that was
sorry.
Don't.
That was my worst
excuse me. You're sorry?
You're sorry?
You're sorry.
When Sarah did everything that she did on this episode?
No. Dave is sorry.
Goodness.
Dave is very sorry.
I mean,
Dave is sorry.
The side of Dave I've never seen.
Yeah. Well, you're better off.
Man.
I also am sorry because the yard people from hell were outside mowing the grass, and I tried to selectively mute, but sometimes I couldn't avoid being unmuted when they were blazing by the window.
I'll fix it.
Okay.
You gonna put the thing in the chat? Put the link in the chat?
Oh, yeah.
Uploader stuff.
Link in the chat. The link in the chat. The elf link on the shelf. Chat.
While he's doing that, Sarah, is there another day this week that you could record? Because I don't think Dave can do a third of it.
I don't. What was I doing? Oh, yeah.
Putting a link in the chat.
Link in the chat.
Dropbox.
Link in the chat. Link in the chat.
Just another link in the chat.
Mm-hmm.
Let's do it. Then it'll be over.
Okay.
I'm great. I'm fine. I'll just talk slowly.
Okay, can we take 5 minutes then between recording so I can come in and like slap you in the face a bunch and wake you up?
I don't want that.
Well.
No, thank you.
I do.
Nobody wants that.
I don't know about nobody.
Allison, I dropped a link in the chat.
Thank you, Allison.
Thank you, Allison.
For that.
Oh, you're welcome.
Thank you for putting up with always. These two.
Who will fight me?
Toxin.
Bye. All right. Beep, 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 beep. Ba, 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 ba